Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the concurrent session. And we're very lucky to have Tim Gorse today from NAB, who's going to be talking to us about Superfund trustee capital management. My name's Naomi Edwards. I'm going to be the chair today. I'll just tell you a little bit about Tim, first of all. I have to put my glasses on. Tim's got over 20 years financial services experience in both banking and wealth management. And recently he's been the head of corporate super pricing and technical services and project director with the NAB Group Credit. He's also been head of performance innovation and the head of strategy and transformation. And currently, Tim is part of a project team delivering a program to simplify and transform the $90 billion NAB wealth superannuation business. And he's a fellow of the Institute and a chartered ERM actuary. So Tim was just saying that he's currently involved in a process to merge 9 different business units within the NAB, and I was complaining I was having to merge 3 different industry super funds together, and he said, oh, that's nothing. So I think he's got a lot of experience across the whole risk area, and you'll see when he talks that that's closely integrated with his views about capital management. So I think we'll be in for a very interesting presentation. So maybe if you could give Tim a round of applause to show we might be a small group, but we're enthusiastic, and then I'll pass over to Tim. And, of course, there'll be plenty of time at the end for questions. So if we could just welcome Tim to the stage, that'd be great.
Yes, thank you, Naomi. And don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to all move to the front, but I will ask you to put up your hand if you work in superannuation. Anyone in? Excellent. Okay. Good. Well, a lot of these concepts are going to be quite familiar to you that I'll go through now. And as a little bit of context, I've only been in superannuation for about 4 years now, been with the NAB for about 20 years. Moved into superannuation. I moved into superannuation about when Stronger Super was being implemented. And we've done quite a bit in NAB recently to try to simplify our funds. As Naomi was mentioning, we've got 9 different super funds, and we're trying to merge all those into one by one big successive fund transfer. But one of the things I've done quite a bit of in my day job over the last few years is capital management, and I'm going to touch on SPS 114 a little bit in this presentation, because I think what basically happened with SPS 114 is the government said superannuation is getting to be a very big industry, and we want to get some capital into it. One way or the other, we want to push some capital into this industry, and they used SPS 114. But what I want to go through today is probably in the context of reimagining the future. I think there's an opportunity for us in the next half an hour just to reimagine the future for superannuation businesses and think through where superannuation businesses come from, with trustees needing to satisfy their fiduciary obligations, very much member-centric, to where superannuation businesses will go to in the future and the role of capital management in that. And so I am thinking a little broader than what you might sort of typically hear in a superannuation conference, but this is an opportunity with today's theme around reimagining the future just to think a little more broadly. So I will get going. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about trustee purpose and sustainability. I'm then going to make the link to capital management responsibility. I've got a little case study around Australian Super with stakeholder expectations. Yes, you can't talk about capital management without talking about risk management. I've got some comments on that. I do want to talk about scenario analysis and then a few insights to finish on. So this will go for about half an hour, hopefully not too much more, and then we'll finish with some discussion. So trustee purpose, we have a trustee purpose. We have a superannuation purpose, I should say, that was confirmed recently to provide income in retirement to substitute or supplement the age pension. I won't actually take a poll on is this a good purpose or not a good purpose. I note it's not the Actuaries Institute's purpose, preferred purpose. I'm actually going to say it's a good thing. We have a purpose, so let's get on with life. And certainly when I look at that purpose, is that a purpose that resonates with me? I think I probably need some personal goals, and that's probably where you start to introduce the role of financial advisors to tell me how much superannuation I have to hold. But the purpose is a good thing, because now that will be enshrined in legislation, and I think there's going to be a very clear link to the trustee's fiduciary obligations and that central purpose. So going on to what is the trustee's purpose? Well, under law, it is and will be an entity that exists to deliver the objective of superannuation for the members it represents. And this fiduciary obligation requires a trustee to take a strict member perspective concerned with the management of financial capital entrusted to them by members. I'm going to extrapolate slightly. So more generally, the trustee purpose is to ensure a longer-term perspective is taken around member interests with the appropriate management of the capital resources for which it is either directly responsible, able to impact through its decision-making, or relies on to be sustainable. I slaved over those words, but I'll sort of introduce some of these concepts as we go down, because one of the things that I want to talk about is what is long-term. Clearly, superannuation purpose is a very long-term purpose. But what is the capital for which a trustee entity is or needs to be responsible for? And I think what we're starting to see is we're starting to see some changes in society. So certainly your typical trustee is really just concerned with a member's financial capital for which it is responsible for the management of that. But I'm just going to challenge that notion as we go through the next couple of slides. So if I now make the link to capital management does happen in superannuation businesses. So don't get me wrong, before SBS 114, you know, good superannuation businesses have always understood their risks and held capital. And if I go through some of those, yes, I've mentioned SBS 114, a lot of capital is being raised by SBS 114. But we should mention that a lot of good superannuation businesses already had that capital. They already had operational risk reserves and they were managing those appropriately. It's just been enshrined in legislation now that that's good practice. So defined benefits, actuaries have always played a really important role around managing defined benefit funding risk. Change risk, I think really good super funds have understood that when you get regulatory change in superannuation, it costs a lot of money. I know what it costs at NAB to implement stronger super, and I won't disclose that to you all, but it was a big number, and it was a number that you'd almost look back and say, if we know we're going to have one of these every 4 or 5 years, maybe we almost need to reserve and spread that cost over our membership base. Insurance risk, so we've got SBS 250, SBS 160 goes into self-insurance risk, and I think actuaries have already played a really good role in making sure superannuation funds manage insurance risk and the capital associated with that. Liquidity risk, that's a big one in superannuation businesses, just making sure you've got enough money there to meet benefit payments, making sure you're covering risks associated with the liquid assets. Working capital, superannuation business just need enough to live by day. So this is traditional superannuation risk and capital management. And actuaries do a great job, you know, helping superannuation businesses understand these risks and translate it into capital requirements and write policies. That's the stuff we do. But I want to just challenge this a little bit put forward a slightly different framework. Now, there's lots of different frameworks around capital management responsibility. One that I quite liked is something called the five capital model. If I translate this into any business environment, it basically says there's five different types of capital that are necessary for a business to be sustainable, for an organisation to be sustainable. And it talks about natural capital. So this is capital which is related to the natural environment, which is important to sustain life itself. Human capital, which is about the people impacted by a business or people employed by a business, their health, their knowledge, their skills, their motivation. Social capital, so this is the communities on which a business might serve, communities on which a business might rely. And then we get into the more traditional capital types that we have done a lot on as an actuarial profession. So manufactured capital, this is the physical infrastructure, the buildings, the technology that form part of a business or that are impacted by a business. And finally, the one that actuaries excel in, which is financial capital, and is a big deal for superannuation. So $2 trillion of financial capital under our responsibility will always be a central type of capital. But I actually came into this presentation just saying, well, does this framework, which is a much broader set of capital responsibilities, does it work for a superannuation trustee to start to think more broadly? And I've come to the conclusion, yes, it does. And it, as a trustee starts to think through running a superannuation business through these different lenses that they're responsible for capital impacts more broadly than just their members' financial capital, it can lend itself to a more sustainable long-term, way to run their business. So my next point is by understanding that capital management is potentially and increasingly a broad responsibility, another critical connection point with capital management is understanding stakeholder expectations. And for superannuation businesses, there are a broad set of stakeholders. So, and in no order of priority, I probably should start with members, obviously, but shareholders are after an adequate return on their business investment. Members are after good investment returns on their financial capital. Employer groups, they want help with their corporate super needs. Service providers, they want to partner with a trustee that can deliver on the contracts that they have with that trustee company. Staff want to work in a great place. Competitors want to... a fund that's good for the industry. You've got regulators, and then you've got the community that holds certain expectations on these financial institutions. And remember, superannuation businesses are becoming increasingly significant financial institutions. And you see with banking, banks are so significant now that they're called systemically important institutions, and they get singled out for special treatment. You know, conduct has to be exemplary in banks, as we see in the press. And, you know, I think superannuation businesses aren't that far behind. You know, there will be a time when they're held to the same standards, and that time may already be here now, but there are community expectations on these organisations. You know, superannuation businesses are rationalising. They're getting to be serious businesses in their own right. Aussie Super manages $90 billion. You know, these are businesses where there's increasing community expectations. So the idea around a broader set of capital management responsibilities is trustees need to also be really tuned in to what are the expectations of the stakeholders who are involved with the running of their business. And these are the things that I'm just going to point out are really critical to sustainability. So understanding your capital management responsibility, but also understanding your stakeholder expectations. So I'm going to do a quick case study on Australian Super. I looked in Australian Super's 2014-15 annual report, and there's a couple of things I really liked in terms of understanding stakeholder views. So you won't be able to read this slide, but one of the things they did is they said, we're really trying to understand our stakeholders and the impact, the things that are important to our stakeholders. And they put this in their annual report, and they had this... you know, on the bottom axis, what's the impact of an issue on Australian Super's strategy to deliver on its strategy? So that was the first question to those stakeholders. And are you interested in that was the second question, and that's on the y-axis. So anything up in the top right corner is something that they're very interested in, is going to have a huge impact. Anything down on the bottom left is not so interested, and we don't think it's going to have a huge impact. Now, interestingly on this one, it tells me what, you know, we already know, which is members and stakeholders think that the most important thing for a trustee is to deliver good returns investment returns for members. Investment risk and outcomes, that was right up in the top right. They put climate change in, which I thought was quite innovative. Interestingly, that was right down the bottom left. So, yeah, not sure it can really help you with your strategy being right across that, and I'm not sure I'm that interested or engaged in it. So to Australian Super's credit, they've thrown that in there and they've been transparent enough to put that in the mix. Now, what they did next, I thought was quite a lot of leadership. They have, despite the fact that all of their stakeholders have told them climate change is probably not a real big thing for us right now, they've made a commitment to sustainability. So they've actually gone out in their report and said, we can understand and we will never throw away the need to deliver great returns, but we will not do that in isolation, and the responsibility to assess issues around environmental, social and governance risk, we'll manage that proactively. So they've gone out there, they've thrown that into their annual report. They want to be known as someone who's committed to sustainability and thinking about the impact of their decisions on more than just on social, on natural, on human capital. And there's a couple of things that I think AustralianSuper is getting out of this for the moment. There is some brand differentiation going on. So there was a headline a couple of weeks ago, AustralianSuper Fund comes second in global green rankings. And I'll throw this out. So, okay, that's a nice bit of press. Differentiation. And if you start to get members who value someone who's thinking more broadly than just investment outcomes, thinking of running a business which is truly sustainable and thinking about a broader set of capital management responsibility, they may attract some new members. So that was a good bit of press for them. I think AustralianSuper are preparing for a future when there will be changes in stakeholder expectations. So they've developed a framework, as you can see on the left, where they'll actually track that. And it wouldn't surprise me if AustralianSuper are seeing the writing on the wall where things like climate change may actually start to move to the northeast, up to the top right, over time. May not happen straight away, might be quite a few years. But they're preparing for that and they're going to track it. And so, in a sense, they're future-proofing their fund for changes in stakeholder expectations. But they're doing it in a way where they're keeping the member at the forefront, and that's absolutely critical for their fiduciary obligations. I actually just thought it was quite a clever repositioning that they've done over the last couple of years. They're an industry leader, $90 billion, $85 billion. So, I think they are thinking long-term. And I wanted to just share that case study. So a little bit about this ranking. AODP stands for Asset Owners Disclosure Project. It's a global not-for-profit organisation that goes out and looks at 500 of the biggest asset managers and gives them a rating. AustralianSuper was given a AAA rating, we've got three Australian entities who are given a AAA rating for their success at managing climate risk within their portfolios. Interesting, isn't it? So we sort of talk about credit ratings. Could this be another rating into the future that speaks to sustainability? Clearly, the press didn't hurt AustralianSuper at all, but I just thought that was quite an interesting... I wasn't aware of that Asset Owners Disclosure Project until I saw it come out in the papers, that headline. So just moving along, that's the AustralianSuper case study. They are starting to think more broadly around their capital management responsibility. If I move along, what I want to do now is just create a link around long-term capital management responsibility and enhanced risk management. And I'll talk a little bit about trustee purpose. Trustee purpose in its classic fiduciary obligation is we will comply with the sole purpose test and act in the best interests of members. But I think increasingly there's an opportunity for trustees to broaden their purpose to not only capture their fiduciary obligations, but have a focus on being sustainable. And I'm going to propose that as trustees start to think more broadly around their capital management responsibility, they will actually start to identify new risks. Because it's when you start to entrench in your purpose a broader perspective around sustainability, you capture things that you might have missed before when you had the narrower focus. So there's an opportunity, I think, for trustees to start to think more broadly, to capture new risks, and I'm going to propose that there's probably risks out there which have the opportunity of severely diminishing a member's outcomes. Climate change is one example. And I'm certainly not going to be advocating climate change one way or the other, but there is a risk that if climate change turned out to be real and you invested in the wrong assets, that the value of those assets could be severely diluted if you've got a long position against climate change. So there's an opportunity, I think, for trustees to now start to sit back and start to think through what are our true risks in a long-term sense, and I'm proposing that that links through to a much broader perspective on capital management. So I think I'll just say effective risk management will strongly link to the trustees' agreed long-term capital management responsibility whilst also assuring it delivers its more immediate fiduciary obligations. Again, just through the five capitals model, what is risk? Well, risk is anything which has the ability to impact on your purpose. And if your purpose is anchored around the responsible management of capital, I guess a natural capital risk is anything that a trustee or superannuation business might do which could degrade the natural environment and resources. Human capital event is anything that might degrade the health, knowledge, skills and motivation of members and other people impacted by the business. Social capital event would be anything that might breach the trust of the key business stakeholders or communities impacted by the business. I'd argue that a conduct event is effectively a social capital event. The social capital is the trust that you engender from the community and your ability to run a business ethically and with integrity, and to breach that, you've actually just damaged your social capital. And the financial impact of that is that's when regulators start to then come in heavy-handedly and impose all sorts of expensive impositions on an industry. So manufactured capital, anything you might do which could degrade infrastructure, buildings, technology, and then of course financial capital, and that's probably no doubt that the biggest list of potential risk events is around things that might endanger a member's financial capital. Just a different way to look at it, there's a lot of events that do get managed by the superannuation is that they probably fall into those different buckets. But as you take this broader framework and start to think about risk management, I'd like to think that there will be maybe some risks come out that the superannuation industry hasn't really been thinking through when they look at it through this perspective. So another case study, operational risk capital scenario analysis. So this case study is a little bit biased. I've just spent the last couple of years helping the NAB implement SPS 114, so a lot of experience with that. So I wanted to share a little bit of a case study around SPS 114 and promote scenario analysis, basically. But I've got a lot of superannuation people in the room. I'm not going to go through what SPS 114 is, so let me skip through all this. Suffice to say that in the context of the framework I just put up, SPS 114 is actually quite a narrow bit of legislation. It is really just saying we want you to hold capital for any operational risk event that might impact on a member's balance. So it's really against just financial capital that's owned by members that could be impacted by an operational risk event. So I'll demonstrate this in a moment, but it's quite a narrow bit of legislation. But that said, I think superannuation businesses can do a lot with it. There's an opportunity for some great conversations to come out of implementing SPS 114. So a couple of observations around operational risk within superannuation businesses. Point number one, there is no data to understand tail risk in operational risk. So, look, NAB's a pretty big player. We're $90 billion. These are fictitious numbers, by the way, so this is not NAB's event, but this is quite typical. I think you would find NAB really has had some real doozies, but certainly not enough event history to build what you'd call a long-tailed loss distribution around operational risk. And I think what we're finding in Australian financial services more generally is banks have been trying for years to build advanced operational risk models. They have a lot more data to play with internally. They have access to external databases, external event history. They can go overseas for history and buy that data in. And I think what you're hearing and finding is even that isn't good enough to really keep the regulator satisfied that it's the best way to think about capital management. You know, there's a little bit of a tendency to be pushed more into standardised type models, even for the banks right now. And I think APRA did the whole industry a favour, the whole superannuation industry a favour, when they said, look, don't waste a lot of time trying to build an advanced model. We're just going to hold 25... hold more if you think you need to, but 25 is your standardised approach. Don't waste your time trying to get too clever and funky with building advanced models, but do spend a lot of time talking about risk management. So that is something that I think has been quite innovative for a lot of boards. Like, certainly, I'm just going to go on to this next slide now. Certainly, in the NAB's case, we decided to use scenarios to help our trustee board understand what tail events might actually look like. And we had a couple of actual events that had occurred that we could deep dive on, but we mainly used scenarios, and these scenarios were all anchored to our material risks in our risk management framework. Per SBS 114, it also says don't stop there, just come up with some new ones as well that maybe aren't in your risk management framework, and we did that as well. But certainly, we in the NAB didn't have a really solid suite of scenarios before SBS 114 came along, so we had the opportunity to present some work to our trustee board around scenarios, and we tested them with management, and we got a lot of really positive feedback from our trustee. They felt they understood those risks a lot better, and we've now institutionalised a process where those scenarios get updated every 2 or 3 years, and they get used to test trustee board's appetite around risk. You know, it's the classic, how do you feel about this scenario? And you throw it out there and they're like, oh, that just makes me feel sick in the stomach. And it's like, well, okay, well, that might be well outside your risk appetite. And so we need to think about what sort of controls you need to put in place to manage that. So I did want to promote the value of having a conversation around operational risk capital management using scenarios. But then I don't want to stop with the classic SPS 114 definition, which is only talk about things that are going to impact members. You know, if you look at SPS 114, that's really where it stops. Anything, if it doesn't impact members, then it falls outside the law. Well, not outside the law, outside this bit of legislation. So what we have also done is, okay, well, let's not stop there. There's lots of events that happen which probably don't impact the members but can have massive impacts on either your reserve levels if you're not for profit, or if you're for profit, on the amount of capital the shareholder might have to put into your business. And what you find with some of these operational risk events is particularly conduct events. Now, it's certainly the NAB with its event around foreign exchange misconduct, the misconduct in relation to the traders a few years ago with the CDOs. The amount of costs to remediate the risk control frameworks and actually spend money to repair the processes that were flawed far outweighed any impacts to customers or the cost of any fines. And so what you find with some of these events is it's not just the impact of the members, but it's all of the remediation work that has to happen in the years after that need to be funded. You know, the money has to come from somewhere. So I'd call that a broader trustee capital perspective, where scenarios shouldn't just take a strict member perspective, but also should have a little bit of thought to what is the impact to just trustee financial resources, because some of these events can have a long and dirty tail of cleanup activity associated with them. And then a little framework that I've developed, which is anchored back to the five capital models, is, as you can see, the SPS 114 focus on the right-hand side, which is quite narrow, can be broadened to think through just non-member financial impacts and impacts to infrastructure. But if you look at a much broader capital management responsibility, there is actually a lot more discussion a trustee board can have around, are there events out there we're just not thinking about that could indirectly or longer term impact on our members by having severe impacts on natural, human or social capital. So the example is there an operational risk event that the trustee or a trustee service provider or a trustee shareholder is responsible for that degrades natural, human or social capital. What would be the long-term impact on fund members of that? So without proposing what that scenario might look like, this framework just starts to broaden some of the things a trustee might think about that could actually longer-term impact on the business and impact on members. So I've given a case study which is operational risk. That's the end of my case study there, but doesn't just stop with operational risk. So scenarios can be used to better understand long-term impacts to business sustainability and, you agree, risk appetite more generally. So investment approach, impact on natural, human or social capital from an unethical, socially irresponsible or unsustainable investment approach. By the way, that might generate absolutely fantastic returns for members in the short term, but I think in the long term could actually manifest itself as an investment loss or something that impacts on the social capital or the reputation of the business. Insurance processes. This is an interesting one because there's been some quite bad press lately against some insurance providers and their decisions around paying out claims. Well, trustees are in the business of deciding whether claims get paid out or not as well. So, that's another example where, there is a big impact on human and social capital from a decision to either pay out a claim or not pay out a claim and community's perceptions around that. So strategic choices, so impact on natural, human or social capital from a poorly chosen strategy or business partnership. Reputation issues, so impact on social capital and member financial capital from bringing the industry into disrepute. So scenarios really work to help bring some of these things to life, and they can be used more broadly than just operational risk. I want to finish with three insights. So insight number one, sustainability driven by trustee acceptance. A sustainability that is driven by trustee acceptance that its capital management responsibility is broad and long-term. So stakeholder expectations with respect to the responsible management of natural, social and human capital are likely to increase over time. And, we're probably seeing that already. Trustees should start repositioning their purpose now. And I threw up the Australian Super case study because I think they're starting to reposition their purpose. Now, I've got absolutely no knowledge around what's going on under the hood. Is that just a motherhood statement at the front? But I think it's a good start. I think they're throwing it out there and they're showing that stakeholder expectations are important. They're going to track those stakeholder expectations. So second point, when a trustee is explicit on the need for longer term sustainability, it should consider referencing the management of capital resources for which it is either directly responsible, able to impact through its decision-making, or rely on to be sustainable. This can all be done congruent with its fiduciary obligations under law. So this is a little challenging, what I'm saying here, because a lot of trustees, if there's trustees in the room, there may well be, they will say, look, I'm bound by law. Law says sole purpose test, fiduciary obligations, by law, that is where I have to focus. I would not disagree with that, but I think the trustee business that wants to truly be sustainable has to start looking beyond just what the law is telling them to do right now and taking responsibility for the capital that's been entrusted to them. And I think you're going to find the bigger funds will have the maturity to do that and are going to start you know, thriving, and are going to start marketing that to their members. So finally, this broader perspective on capital management responsibility will lead to the identification of new risks that have the potential to impact members in the long term and increase the importance of risk management more generally. So apologies, I haven't actually told you today what those risks are. My thesis today is those risks will actually start to bubble to the surface as trust entities start to take a broader perspective on capital and also on their stakeholder expectations. So the other insight, if you haven't picked up already, I am a fan of scenario analysis as a practical tool to engage stakeholders around long-term risk to capital resources. And I've been on the other side of the fence, by the way. I have been working for a bank that's into advanced models. You can do that for credit risk in the bank, and it works very effectively. Operational risk, the jury is out in a banking context. And banks spend, you know, even just on operational risk capital modelling alone, banks spend millions of dollars, you know, trying to get that stuff right. Is that where they're going to get their biggest bang for buck? I would argue against that for the superannuation industry. I'd say you'll get a, rather than spending those millions on an advanced model, spend it on a really engaging discussion with your trustee board anchored around a good understanding of their capital responsibility and anchored around some scenarios that bring it to life. So finally, this is my final slide, strong enterprise risk management connects risk, return, capital and purpose. So purpose is central, you know, no doubt about that, and that's why purpose is so important, because everything should be driven from purpose. Which is why I want to challenge a trustee that just sort of says, well, my purpose is I'm just doing what law tells me to do, which is you know, member interest and fiduciary obligations and prudential standards. You know, trustee entities, they're starting to get systemically important financial institutions in their own right. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if in 10 years they're like the banks and they have to actually take a social and community responsibility around the capital that's been, significant capital that's been entrusted to them. And that needs to be explicit in their purpose. So I'm not saying trustees aren't doing that now, far from it, but I think they almost need to just lead with the fact that their, you know, their responsibility is for the sustainability of their businesses for long-term interests of their members. So it starts with purpose, but down the bottom, capital I think needs to be thought through more broadly than what it is at current. It's very member financial capital centric. Return expectations need to be thought through from a whole variety of different stakeholders, not just members. Need to be thought through not just in terms of what their expectations are now, but also what they might be in 10, 20 years' time, because this is a long-term business. And you know, reimagine the future. These stakeholders will think about the world differently. Intended, there's just no doubt. You know, they're not going to be, you know, the world's going to change. So a good, sustainable business will try to tune into that. And then finally, risk connects to all of that. So risk, you know, new risks will fall out of a broader understanding of capital and a broader understanding of stakeholder expectations in terms of superannuation businesses. So I'm going to finish there. Thanks for listening. I hope that was, I hope that was a little different to what you're expecting to hear. Certainly I could have gone down the path of traditional capital management, but I think the future is a broader perspective around capital management for these superannuation businesses. So, thank you.
Thank you, Tim. We've got 15 to 20 minutes for questions now, and I think you probably will have some questions, because it's quite a, in a sense, a challenge being put out by Tim, I suppose, to the historic sole purpose test and view of how we manage capital. So does anyone have any questions they'd like to? Yeah, we've got one down at the back. Great, thank you.
I'm Mike Murphy. I'm an actuary And I'm also a trustee director. So I'm going to rise to your challenge, particularly the amount of information I've had at board level from legal input as well, that yes, there's a sole purpose test and yes, there's APRA and regulations around that, but over all that, there's also trust law. And trust law says you need, as a trustee, to act in the financial best interests of your members. And so to expand the range of that, whilst it's inherently sensible and make feel good if you like, I think it's putting trustees in a very difficult position when they have to deal with the legalities of both the APRA regulated system and trust law in particular, and to expand your gamut of what you're trying to do beyond the financial interests of your members. And I'm comfortable with the second order issue about social consequences, and the society generally is second order or third order related to the financial interests of members, but to actually spend significant time and effort departing from the specific regulatory areas where trustee is bound by legislation, and the other thing is cost-benefit analysis. Who's paying for this as well is another continual question in my mind. And I noticed very early in your talk you did talk about the one of the stakeholders being the business who needs who is supporting the fund, and given you're from nine NAB funds or whatever, then clearly there's a stakeholder there who has business financial requirements. And you also, I think it's slide two, talked about this capital being provided by the members. And so, again, you've got this intergenerational equity thing that we're all familiar with, which is if there isn't much capital there now, taking it from current members to set up a utopian system for some future member 10 or 20 years from now, that is a very difficult position for a trustee director who's really tasked with the fiduciary risks and the legislation of both trust law as well as superannuation law.
Well, I'm glad I made you feel as uncomfortable as I clearly have. And I'm also really glad the theme of this conference is reimagining the future, because I've had a lot of fun actually challenging all the binds that I appreciate a trustee's under law. I was curious when I saw the Australian Super case study around where that was coming from. Is that the trustees who are driving that? Is it the executive management team in Australian Super and... and certainly in the NAB, we're a for-profit retail fund, so the trustee sits there as a board, but there's also management and there's shareholder money to spend on some of these things. So, I certainly don't have the answers, except to say that I think the key thing here is stakeholder expectations. And at the end of the day, that they're just going to evolve as they will evolve, and I suspect... as they evolve, a superannuation fund that's thinking about its sustainability will be ready to respond to that. And I thought Australian Super were quite courageous, just saying climate change is not a big issue to any of our stakeholders right now, but that may not always be the case. So I think they're just getting ready for the change as and when it occurs.
Thanks, Tim. Any more questions for Tim? Yep.
Mike Murphy again, and I was intrigued by the example and your summary of the outcome of the climate change thing with Australian Super is that, if you like, they're preparing for the future changes in expectations. And I looked at it from a perspective of, hang on, we've asked the members, we know and hear what you say you want, but we were going to do what you should be wanting rather than what you say you want. That's another interpretation to be placed on what's actually happened there. And, again, there isn't any right or wrong answer, but it is intriguing that if we do surveys and ask our members either what they want or what they think, to then actually go and do something which is contrary to what they want and what they think is, well, it's a brave position.
Yeah, I just had a sort of question. I guess it's about that one thing that trust law hasn't changed, but we are clearly seeing many large super funds make decisions, particularly in the investment space, that take a different perspective. So, for example, Hester's divestment of Transfield assets and local government's divestment of climate change, of carbon decarbonisation of assets, you know, CBUS's heavy investment in property, it seems that the larger super funds are actually starting to change their investment strategy to reflect the stakeholder wishes and desires, and clearly they feel comfortable that that's still within their things. Would you agree that we're actually seeing the larger funds start to try and reconnect with their broader stakeholders, and that's starting to change and broaden how we view capital?
Yes, I observe all those things, no doubt. I think they're trying to tune in to community expectations. You know, and they're trying to connect it back to their fiduciary obligation, no doubt, which is generating member returns. But I think you actually find some of these investment strategies that are trying to be more sustainable with a focus on natural and human and social capital, that I don't think the returns are too bad. So they're generating for members and giving that choice to members. But I also see them doing it in a way which isn't throwing the baby out with the bathwater either. Like when I looked at Australian Super's case study, they're still relevant to all those members who might be agnostic to any climate change risk and not really feel that's important. I think they're still trying to get themselves, it's marketing, right? They're trying to keep themselves relevant to those members. But I actually thought what they were doing was showing some leadership. You know, I thought they were actually trying to make a differentiation, show that they're socially responsible, and it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. I guess it'll play out in their investment returns over time. But if it's playing out in the press, I think it's playing out quite positively for them. Right now, they probably would have been quite happy with the press they got a couple of weeks ago. So,
thanks, everyone. We've got time for one more question, if anyone else would like to ask a question. Great. Well, otherwise, perfect timing. We've got a bottle of wine for Tim, and I encourage you to fill out your feedback forms, and thank you very much. And if you could give Tim a round of applause.